Oh, good evening.
Good evening.
This is so cool. So many people sitting on the floor. Wonderful to see you all again. And Karen is back. Welcome, welcome. Rhonda, you know everybody? Do you know everybody?
Pretty much. Who's the...
I haven't met you yet.
Was it Karen?
Karen.
Karen. K-A-R-I-N. I'm Ron.
Nice to meet you.
And I met Lindbergh last night, but I forgot your name.
Shuka.
And that's your daughter?
Yes.
Yeah. And you?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Ron.
So we're starting a new study of the Heart Sutra with beginner's mind. Some of us have studied it more than once, and so it's easy to think, oh, well, I know all about the Heart Sutra, sure. But actually, many, many people study it their whole lifetimes. Write it over and over again and absorb it in ways that go in without thinking, as the way we chant. You can't figure it out as you're chanting. You just let the words go rolling through. There's no analysis. If you start to try to analyze, you get very mixed up. What does this mean? I don't know. But at a certain point, it's helpful to look more deeply into it and to begin to see first where it came from, at least as best we know, and just appreciate that. It's very, very old. It came just a few hundred years after Buddha died. So it's a very early development in India. And it came all the way up to here as something very, very particular for our practice. So it warrants looking into deeply. And it's considered to be the essence of our practice. Besides Zazen, the Heart Sutra is explaining it all in very simple terms, although we have to throw up our hands in the end and say it's the untalkaboutable effort to say something. It's pointing to what we can't quite say, but which we feel deeply. Red Pine gives a nice history. He goes deeply into where it came from, as much as we know. There's another version of the history that, if you're interested, look up Kaz Ta-Nehisi's book on the Heart Sutra, and he tells the whole story in detail of, what's his name, the man who fetched all the material from India back to China. There were two of them. And the one who brought the Prajnaparamita materials back to China, and they started translating them. And he heard some of those in China and decided that he would go and find them and bring them back and translate them. So he did this incredible trip through the Gobi Desert and over the Hindu Kush, losing half as men, and traveling up and down India, talking to all the different temples and collecting copies of all the different sutras. He stopped in Nalanda at the great, great university in Mahada and stayed there and learned from the teachers there, and then went back and hung out with a king in China and started translating. And translated the Heart Sutra, of course, but many, many, many other things as well. It's what Red Pine has been doing. It's what Thomas Cleary has been doing. There's so many wonderful translators who have gone back and fetched what's left to bring to us. So when I first began, the Heart Sutra was just about what we had. There weren't any translations. And then Coben started reading and sort of translating off the cuff of a few things so that we kind of knew what things were. But it was Thomas Cleary worked with him quite a lot. And Coben helped him bring those things to pass. And so we have so much material now. But there's masses left. Lots and lots. After 2,000 years, of course, there would be a lot of material. Commentaries on commentaries. Sutras are supposed to be the original speech of Buddha. And so all this material, although it was developed after Buddha's time, is still considered to be from his mouth. His teaching carried into words once more. And of course, there are tons and tons of prajnaparamitas, and 10,000 lines and 100,000 lines. You can get a big fat book that's been translated that's. It just goes on and on and on and on with the same message over and over. And the Heart Sutra is a condensed condensation of that mass of material. That's a wonderful thing to read on a cross-country trip once with my family. I read that all the way across America. It was so interesting. I recommend it. Especially on a trip like that, you can just take little bites as you go along, and it opens up. Heart Sutra was likely composed during the first century AD, maybe in Afghanistan or Pakistan, maybe Uzbekistan or Uttar Pradesh, UP. That's where I used to go. We don't know. Somewhere in there. And it's a huge amount of land. But people were all very much involved with each other, and there was a huge amount of trade going all through there, over the mountains and over the deserts, and people were all involved with each other very, very much. It was a huge civilization, though it's hard to imagine now. It sounds so long ago and far away, but it was a very, very busy time. And I think people were thirsty for this. In China, they were thirsty for it. They had a little taste of it, and it wasn't enough. And so they went back to get some more. So Fred Pine says the teaching of this sutra is known as Prajnaparamita. Prajna is the Sanskrit word for wisdom. So it's about wisdom. He says, the Buddhists of ancient India referred to what comes before knowledge. Pra means before, and nya means to know. So it means before we start thinking, before our intellect kicks in. And he says further, Shunryu Suzuki called it beginner's mind. So remember, this is a place where we can't nail it down, cannot nail it down. So he says there are three levels of prajna, three levels of wisdom. One is plain old mundane wisdom, everyday ordinary wisdom. The second one is metaphysical wisdom, what appears to be permanent as impermanent, what appears to be pure as impure. It's looking through things and seeing that they're not exactly the way we think they are. It's beginning to see that there's more to things than we guessed at first. And then there's transcendent wisdom, prajna, which sees all things, whether plain ordinary or metaphysical or permanent or impermanent or whatever, as neither having a self or not having a self, as inconceivable and inexpressible. The first two, mundane wisdom and metaphysical wisdom, result in attachment to views. So there's that word, that magic word, attachment. Then we get an idea about what it is. Oh, it's all impermanent. It's an idea. It's a very helpful idea. It keeps us from being caught by things. Except when we get caught by the idea of impermanence, then we're stuck again. So this is how to get unstuck. That's the whole point of this, to unstick the mind. So nothing can be characterized as permanent, pure, or having a self. And yet, neither can anything be characterized as impermanent, impure, or lacking a self. This is because there is nothing to which we might point and say, this is permanent or impermanent. You can't really say. It's both and neither. So paramita means to reach the other shore. And he quotes a Chinese teacher, Tai Ching, who said the meaning is that suffering of samsara is like a great ocean, and the desires of thoughts of being are boundless. Ignorant and unaware, their waves of consciousness swell and give rise to doubt and karma and the cycle of birth and death, to bitterness that has no limit and from which they cannot escape. This is what is meant by this shore. The Buddha used the light of great wisdom to shine through the dust of desire and to put an end to suffering once and for all, to cross the sea of samsara and to realize nirvana is what is meant by the other shore. That's a very poetic and romantic way of thinking about it. It's kind of magical thinking, because when you really look deeply into it, you have to see that samsara, this world of hard edges and sharp corners that bruises us so much, is nirvana. We're there already. It's just a matter of view, how we see and experience it. And so we practice in order to find a way of being the two worlds as one world. That's what Zazen brings us to. So we say not two, not one, which doesn't really help either. So maybe that's enough. And we'll start on Noble Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva next week, because that's the very first word, is Avalokiteshvara, even though it's the Wisdom Sutra. So what's compassion doing there? Very first word. So are there comments, questions? As if there were a river that we had to cross, and we're on one side of the river, and then in some way our practice carries us across the river, and then we find ourselves on the other side.
So it's a sort of literal, kind of imaginary world.
Yes.
We can.
Yes.
Okay.
But it's helpful to think in those terms. There is some kind of transition that happens. It happens, but it doesn't. We aren't orchestrating anything. It just occurs as we practice. And sometimes we're on this shore, sometimes we're on the other shore. Actually, but it's helpful, especially in the beginning, to think in those sort of separating terms. It's how our mind naturally works. But we're trying to discover the way that our mind works that isn't separated, mm-hmm. that actually can see everything together as connected and of a piece, that we're all in the soup together.
So it's kind of like training wheels in a way that you, mm-hmm. you can use them to get going. Think that way, and sometimes it's sort of satisfying to think that way, but if you get too hung up on it, then it would get in the way of you actually seeing
the
more ambivalent or kind of
mm-hmm.
coexisting realities.
Yeah.
I guess you could say. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Lotus Sutra has lots of stories like that. You know, it's like children playing in a house that's burning, and the father tempts him to come out and offers him little horses and toys and things. Oh, please come out, come out. know, here's all this delicious dharma that you can have. And then they come out and there's just one thing that he has for them. But they wouldn't come unless he offered the toys. So it's that kind of teaching also. We'll teach you all these things that are so attractive and look kind of yummy, and then you go to that and then something else shows up. Karen?
Pardon my beginner's mind. I don't really know what Zazen means. And when asked, because you said we have Zazen and we have the heart center. We have these two things.
Mm-hmm. Zazen means just sitting.
It's the sitting.
Just sitting. So, you know, I just read Reb Anderson's description of meeting a Tibetan teacher who asked what our teaching was, and he said it was just sitting, and he described it to him, and the Tibetan teacher said, "That's remarkable." He said, "That's what our most senior students get taught. Only after years of other kinds of things that they get taught this just sitting." But we start out with that, and we end up with it also. Just sitting by itself is Buddha Dharma. And if we offer ourselves to ourself, that's all we need. It's all here, right now. But it takes effort. It's a good question. Yeah. Well, I hope you take this home and I hope you try to memorize the English version if you can. I think that will be helpful. We'll chant it each time, so it'll start running through you. Mystifying you even more, probably, but that's good. Let it run. And see if you can check this out. He writes in a very clear and very interesting way. I don't completely believe everything he says. He gets a little elaborate and strange in some of the things he says, but basically he's right there, right here. And I also have the Dalai Lama book and the Reb book and several other ones that I will use through these weeks. Also, I wanted to share with you that Carolyn Dilley, who is our Tenzo at Sesshin, is re-engaging with us. She's an old student who's been here forever. And then she took a break to become a teacher of Vipassana in Santa Cruz. So she has a very rich background. And she is going to arrange our sesshin in August. I mean, she's starting to arrange the sesshin now, going by Donna Lynn's guidelines. And She's already working hard on it and thinking hard about it. So we are extremely fortunate to have her step in this way. She is one of the two that I've transmitted, Paula being the other one. And Paula did a huge amount of help at the session that we just finished when I was sick in bed most of the time and Paula was in the zendo the whole time and did a beautiful job. So Carolyn would like also to relieve me of my time sometimes here also on Saturdays and sometimes substituting on a Tuesday night. She too is studying the Heart Sutra, and we're about to start a study of the Lotus Sutra, she and I. So she has a wonderful background that it will be very interesting for you all to share. So I'm very pleased about that, and I hope you all will be pleased too. She's very, very lovely, very wise and wonderful woman. No questions? Yes.
How many different sutras are there exactly?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear.
Sorry. How many different sutras are there?
Jillions. Fat books like this. I have three fat books like this. And I think there are more. They're all attributed to Buddha, and they all come from way, way back, before 1 BC. So they're close to his time, and nobody knows. They in Buddha's time, they didn't write things down. So they were all passed on by memorizing the stories. That's why they keep repeating. If you read them, they keep saying the same thing over and over so they can remember it. And then finally, somebody started writing them down when they started writing things. So that was some hundreds of years later. So we don't quite know. But what was saved were the things that gave the same flavor, the same feeling of truth that came from Buddha. That was the test. If you feel the truth, you know, even though you don't know quite how you know. Yeah, it's well to look into them. They're all full of stories. A lot of stories. Funny stories. Wild elephants. Are there announcements?
We're going to have our next full day sit here at the Friends Meeting House on March 14th, I believe. That's a Saturday. And maybe Carolyn will be joining us.
I think she will. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Great.
Yes. It is great. And the website is up and running?
Yes.
It's nice. Has everybody seen it?
Yep.
It's great.
Yes, Sayo has been updating it. In fact, there's some pictures of Carolyn's recent pilgrimage to India.
Really?
Some Buddhist sites.
Well,
yeah.
Cool.
All the new material has links on the home page. the footer of the home page.
Super. Yeah, thank you, and thank Marie. That was a labor of massive proportions, I would say. And it looks great. I'm really so pleased. I keep bragging about it. Oh, look at our website. Well, let's do our 1 minute sit.